Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to Energy Speaks Back, powered by B2B Energy. My name is Paul Webb, and I'm the founder of B2B Energy, and I'm your host. And weekly, I present to you energy experts from around the world. Welcome to episode 130. Our purpose, as always, is to provide a good understanding of energy management knowledge from around the world, which is available today for us to deliver savings that impact on our planet. We would like to thank utility people who are creating a better career and future for people in our industry, and Esther Energy, who are our certificate partners. My guest today is one of the UK's leading business strategists and a performance coach. And I wanted to interview him regarding supporting energy experts in their journey of delivering an energy management system to reduce an organisation's third largest expense. So without any further ado, I give you Will Polston. Good afternoon, Will. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Brilliant. And we've just found out that you live just around the corner, and I'm interviewing people all around the world, and we could have had a face-to-face and done this, couldn't we?
Yeah, hop, skip and a jump away.
Yeah, amazing. So we have met through LinkedIn, and we have been just exchanging some information regarding behaviour change and that element. So for the benefit of our audience, can you give some background and your origin story to where you are in your industry?
Absolutely. So the short version is I grew up with a belief that money equaled happiness. And how that came about was I remember my dad used to leave the house at 5 o'clock in the morning, come home at 7, 8 o'clock at night, and he'd bring the stress and the frustration of work home with him. So he used to work in London for a company. And I don't know if you can relate to this, but it was that kind of tension that you could physically feel when he would walk through the door. And that was essentially what we were, that's essentially what I remember growing up. And one day my dad came home from work, and he'd quit his job to set up a business with one of my uncles. Now I've got two very wealthy uncles, Paul. One's a billionaire, the other one's a multi-millionaire. And dad always used to say they just got lucky. That was his excuse. You know, they just got lucky. And I thought, oh, great, this is going to be great. Dad's going to be just like my uncles, and they're always full of energy and enthusiastic, and that's going to be great. Fast forward a few months later, my dad was sleeping in a separate room to my mum, curtains shut all day, didn't leave the house, all the stereotypical stuff that now you would look back and go, oh, he was feeling feelings of depression. Yeah. And what had happened was the business that he was going to set up with my uncle never ended up getting started. And he was in a rock in a hard place at that point, because he had left the job that he hated with the view of setting something up, didn't want to go back to a job that he hated, but didn't know what to do. And life kind of changed as I knew it. And after a while, I was about 10 years old at this stage, I started to connect the dots, because there was Uncle Mark. He was a billionaire. He was really happy. Uncle Steve, multimillionaire. He was really happy. Then I'd look at my dad when he worked in London. All right, he was stressed and stuff, but he was a lot happier than he is now. He doesn't leave the house. So for me, it was obvious money equaled happiness. So I just went off on that tangent to make as much money as I could as early as I could. I was quite good at doing that at a young age, from going around knocking on houses and offering to wash cars and buying and selling stuff in school. And doing all that. And then at 18, I stumbled across personal development. The more personal development I did, the more money I made, and that went on for some years. And then 10 years ago this year, Paul, I had what I call my lightning moment, and bam, it just hit me. Cried my eyes out for about 15 minutes, because in that moment, I realized my real driver was nothing to do with money. It had never really been about money. What it was really about was my dad, and how my dad hadn't achieved certain things he was capable of, and the impact that had on him and my mum and me and my family and a whole host of other people. And I vowed in that moment, I don't want anyone else to have to go through the suffering that he went through and we went through as a result of not achieving their full potential. So from that moment on, I've become obsessed with anything to do with human awareness, human potential, human behavior, to enable me and others to be able to drive forward and do what it is that they're capable of, with the view of having what I call the ripple effect, which is by them achieving their full potential, so it's beneficial to them, their family, their friends, their community, society, humanity, and the universe.
Wow. And that was a short version. What's the long version go like?
Yeah, that can go on and on, but that's the short version.
Right. And then May I ask your dad, what did he end up doing? Did he go
So,
back to work?
he did, yeah, and he ended up sort of indirectly finding something that was really of kind of an interest to him in a very different way. And yeah, look, now he's happier than he's ever been.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Working a job he's now got his own business, doing what he kind of enjoys doing. It gives him the element of freedom, which was the thing that I think he always really wanted, was to be able to have a freedom of choice. So yeah,
Yeah.
that's kind of where he's at now.
And well, I can relate to that because my dad worked for Ford's and he worked days and he worked nights. And when he was working nights, and obviously money was important to him because he wanted to pay off his mortgage. That was his goal. And when he was working the nights, we always used to say, oh, Dad's got his Ford head on, because he used to be grumpy, he wasn't happy, because he, you know, it's working very, very hard. And it's not like going to work and sleeping at work, because you're not, it was production line. So they had to be sort of keep, you know, very focused. So it was hard work, and he used to come home and, you know, sleep all day long. And it wasn't a very nice atmosphere, but I can really relate to what my dad, if you ask my dad whether he enjoyed that work, yes and no, but he was very proud to work for Ford's. He was that sort of person that, you know, going forward when he took early retirement, and because he could, but he was happy. And for me, how I relate to that is I have to be happy in what I'm doing. And I've been doing energy for 43 years now, and I'm really happy, and it's just got better and better. They brought in legislation. They brought in lots of, in the early days, it used to be hard banging your head against the wall, as I mentioned before, about come up with all these ideas of reducing energy, and clients say, no, 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 we're not going to do that, because it's, you know, we make money here, so we don't care about money. But now we're in an energy crisis. Energy's gone through the roof. They're now thinking about it. So for me, it's got better and better with legislation and that side of it. So we talked about change and working with organizations. How does that work? Is that some of the things you're doing with organizations?
Yeah. So I generally work with the individuals, but it's the same principles apply across the board. And this is where I think it's really interesting, is that you said you were banging your head up against the wall, right? And the reason for that, when we look at it at a sort of neurological level, when we're looking to influence change, it's because you, in that instance, maybe were trying to change your behavior. And anyone that ever tries to influence change at a behavior level, which is one of the lower levels, will find themselves banging their head up against the wall either instantly or within the short term, right? Yeah. So we've all seen it before, where someone decides they want to lose weight. So the thing I'm going to do in the short term is I'm going to change my behavior by eating less or moving more. And that might work for a period of days or weeks or even months. But eventually, if we haven't dealt with what's going on at what I call a higher level, then it will fall down. And I'll explain. So if I explain the different levels, so this process I'm explaining is something called neurological levels of change. It was created by a guy called Robert Diltz. So if we explain from kind of the what I call the top and then work down. So I wrote a book called North Star Thinking. And everything that I do and the work that I do with my clients is about getting them to create what I call a North Star, which is a mission in life that's the equivalent of trying to empty the sea with a spoon. It's this thing that they can strive towards over and over and over again that isn't just a goal that they set. Because the problem is, if you set a goal, and because a lot of people, by the way, won't set any goals, right? So let's say you set a goal. Let's say you achieve that goal. Then you put all of your effort into achieving the goal. You get it achieved. And you go, right, well, now I need to set my next goal. And you put all your energy into getting the next goal. And then you get that. And then you go, right, well, I need to set another one. And what happens? You end up just pinballing, you know, imagine it from left to right, left to right. And I call it when-then syndrome, because you find yourself saying, well, when I achieve this, then I'll be all right. When I achieve that, then I'll be okay. When I achieve this, then I'll be complete. And it's just kind of this self-fulfilling sort of vicious circle.
When I was younger, I used to call it the if I do that, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly, right? So this is the challenge, and it becomes really demoralizing and unmotivating. People come really unfulfilled when they're doing it. Whereas the idea of having this goal in life that's so big you never achieve, then you can detach from the outcome and you can focus on the process instead. So you're every day, it's like this expansive process of it's becoming better and better and better and better, rather than it's a means to an end, right? So where's that relevant in the process of what you're talking about? So Robert Diltz, he referred to this as the purpose, right? So I call it a North Star, the reason, the why you're doing something. So for me, a purpose is the why you're doing, the mission is the what you're doing. But then your purpose, your North Star in my language, creates your identity. And your identity is a statement that begins, I am. And anything you say, I am, you are. So if, for example, you have somebody that believes, and I'm going to use an analogy that most people will get, and then we'll bring it back to energy. If you have the analogy that I am unhealthy, so you have that identity. Oh, sorry, flip it the other way around. I am healthy.
Yeah.
Then the behavior of eating the chocolate bars or eating all of the burgers and chips every day isn't a behavior that I am healthy as an identity would have, or doesn't I am match. An athlete, it doesn't match, right? Yeah. And your identity is your strongest form of belief. So you've got your identity that sits above your beliefs and values, right? So your beliefs and values are aligned. Then you've got your beliefs and values. You believe what you do and what you don't do. Then you've got your skills and capabilities. So your skills and capabilities are relevant to your beliefs and values. Then it's your skills and capabilities that create your behaviors, and it's your behaviors that create your environment. So explain it again from the top. You've got purpose. You've then got your identity. You've got your beliefs and values as the next level. Then you've got your capabilities and skills. Then you've got your behavior. Then you've got environment. When people try and change from the bottom up, they struggle. Yeah, they will struggle. And that's the part that most people don't do. If I want to create influence of change with my clients, mm-hmm. I can get much better lasting results because I will work at purpose or North Star and identity level, and then values and beliefs, not just at the behavior level or the environment level. Because you could put someone in an environment where they have got lots of healthy food, for example, but then you put them in the environment where then there's some unhealthy food, and they're more likely to go and just take that because they're in that environment. We've all been in that situation. You take your friend who says, oh, I want to stop drinking for a little while. I'm going to give up drinking. And you go, right, we're all going to meet up today, and we're all going to meet up at the pub. Yeah. You know, you're now reliant on willpower. Whereas if they had the identity of I'm a non-drinker, they're less likely to do it. So yeah. that's I use those different analogies, but it applies across the board.
Right. And I know you're not in the energy sector as such. How can we bring that? So I like that. How can we bring that into what we're trying to achieve with working with organizations? Because when we look at saving energy, 50% of the savings. So say we looked at a building and we can save 100% of part of that building. 50% of that would be through technology, changing the lights, putting solar on the roof. And the other 50% of that would be through behavior change and changing the way the organization works and everyone within the building. Is there a way, again, are we shooting for that North Star again?
Yeah, I think you are. And I think this is, whilst it may be a harder sell in the short term, it will become an easier sell in the long term. And you've already seen this be demonstrated. So the governments, not just in the UK, but around the world, have put in place certain initiatives for organizations. Yes. And because of that, certain organizations have now decided to adopt certain policies as part of their identity. So whereas you and I would say, I am, these organizations would say, we are, right? So yeah. If we are a socially responsible company.
Yeah.
Then there's certain beliefs and values and skills and capabilities and behaviors of a organization that is a socially responsible company. Mm-hmm. And by them having an understanding of exactly who they are and who they want to be, then that will help. Now, one of the other key things is, let's face it, if you're in business, this is where most businesses go wrong. And if you were to ask most businesses, about their customers, they don't have a clue. Now, one of the biggest companies in the world, you've probably received a parcel from them in the last 30 days, Paul, would be who? Who's the company that I'm thinking of?
Amazon.
Amazon. Okay. Now, Amazon are regarded as one of, and I appreciate there's going to be people listening to this that are going to disagree, but they are one of the best companies in the world at being customer-centric, right? Mm-hmm. They've thought about all the things that we want before we've even realized we want them.
Yeah.
They've thought about one-click purchases, one-click, and it turns... They've thought about Amazon Prime and being able to have deliveries turn up.
The following morning.
Because Amazon Prime is just the means for us to get what we want. I don't know about you. I've ordered something at 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and it's been delivered by 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. Yeah. Just unheard of, right?
I've ordered something in the morning and got a door. Someone's knocked on my door and said, here it is. And you think, wow, that's crazy, isn't it?
Exactly. But what they then did is they then came up with the product, i.e. Amazon Prime, that enabled them to fulfill on that piece of the work. Mm. Now, where this could be key is that whilst a lot of businesses say, we don't need to save money, we don't need to do this, what they fail to think about is the impact further down the line of, yes, you may not need to save the money. However, what are your customers wanting and thinking? Because it's ultimately their customers that are wanting and thinking the things that are paying their bills, right? So this is where it comes back to this piece of what's the... And without going into the whole marketing side of things, is when we really get into the intricacies of human behavior, yes, companies that are selling a product have a demographic. But then when they start thinking about the psychographic and the psychic graphic, which is knowing, for us becoming aware of what it is that their customers want, they don't even know that they want, hence the psychic element of it.
Yeah.
Then we can really get into some interesting behavior change here. And that's where I think that these pieces of getting clear on the organization, have they got clear on what it is that they actually want to be long term, and who do they want to be? What's their identity? What's their values and beliefs? And understanding the repercussions if they don't do it, right? Because that's the other key, element here is what does it actually mean other than saving a few quid if they don't do it?
So I'm going to ask, there's a process that we look to follow. Are all organizations probably the same, or each organization is going to be different regarding their purpose or their whys?
Yeah. Every organization is going to have a set of DNA, let's call it, or a set of values that are completely unique to them. In the same way that you and I have a set of values that are as unique as our fingerprint. The more that you can understand someone's values, the easier it is to influence them.
Yeah.
And if you can understand an organization's values and know what is really driving them, then it's far easier to have that conversation with them based on what it is that they actually want. Because then all of a sudden, it's no longer a push and pull conversation.
Yeah.
It's now about our service is the perfect fit for what you're looking to do.
Yeah.
And we could choose to work with you.
You know what? Yeah, you're going to laugh. I've been in this industry for 43 years and the penny's dropping here because I look at my list of customers and I can see where I'm pushing and pulling along the journey. And I'm not saying that rightly or wrongly there, but I'm just saying that some customers have come to us and said, look, we want ESG framework to be developed. We want ISO 50001. We want to drive that. Other organizations, I'm sort of saying, we need to do this, this, and this to make the say. So I'm starting up here and I'm starting down here. And we're sort of like, we probably will all end up in the right direction, but that journey is going to be a lot easier for me understanding that I understand their values and I can understand it very quickly.
Yeah. And this is where I think that the smarter businesses, in my opinion, are moving towards this concept of actually we can help you because of what you want. Cause it's far easier to help someone get what they want than you sell them what you want to sell them. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
So
yeah.
if it's a case of, look, this is what we want, this is where we're going, this is how we're going, and you can share with them and get them to see something they hadn't seen before, like I say, whether it's thinking the next layer deeper, which is, well, what do your customers want? You know, where, what are they actually thinking? What are they doing on the ground? Are they choosing to only invest into the organizations that have got the appropriate policies in place, so that they don't end up finding themselves losing market share? And this is where these principles can be applied in this way.
One thing that we have the challenge is that individuals within the organization, so it's, we may convince the board, we may convince, say, the energy manager, the facilities team as such, but then they've got to go and convince the staff. And what we find, hotels, for instance, a chef will come in, put all his gas rings on because he can. Yeah. And because he's going to be busy. And he's, so when you go into the kitchen, he's got 8 gas rings on. So for every gas ring that's on, bad, that's bad practice. It's about 50, it used to be 1500, it's probably £3,000 a year cost. So then multiply that by 8. If he was to ask the question, do you do that at home? He would say, no, of course not. So why do we do it here? Where do we start? Have we got to then start to go granular with that idea of the North Star again with that individual?
Yeah, because if there's, and we talk about culture, right? Every business has a culture. It's whether it's the culture they want or they don't. Yeah. So you've got a culture. Now, if this culture isn't what you want, I argue that that's because there's either a North Star problem, so they haven't got clear on it, or if they have got clear on it, it's not been communicated effectively. So if they've got that North Star and everybody knows what they're working towards, then there's going to be above the line, what I call above the line and below the high, above the line and below the line behaviors that are aligned with achieving that outcome. So again, I'm going to use other examples because it's easier for a lot of people to get their head round for the purpose of this podcast. But if one's an athlete, then there are going to be above the line. If someone's an athlete, then there's going to be above the line behaviors and there's going to be below the line behaviors, right? So above the line behaviors might be training every day, making sure they're doing flexibility every day and eating a whole food nutritious diet 90% of the time, let's say. Whereas below the line behavior would be going to the pub and drinking 10 pints on a Friday night before game day, right? So it's establishing what these behaviors are. Now, if everybody's bought into this as a company and this culture is being portrayed and these behavior traits are being portrayed throughout the whole company, then it's very easy to identify who isn't in the gang, if you see what I mean. They're not part of where we're going and what we're doing. And then it ends up ridding itself of what people want and where they're going because it's been communicated throughout the whole organization and everybody knows what they should and shouldn't be doing based on the values of the organization.
So we get that peer pressure then, don't we?
Peer pressure to a degree. It's interesting. You used the word a moment ago about convince. Well, and I know this is me being pedantic, but it's because language is so important. Words create worlds, right?
Yeah.
And rather than using the word, well, I'm going to convince you, is I would see your job as a B to like, somebody that's in your with your area of expertise is actually you're in the education industry. You're educating people
educating
what it is that can be done. It's not your job to convince them. You're just going to educate them. And you're also in the when business. It's not a case of if you can help them. It's when you're going to help them. It's are they going to get on board sooner or are they going to get on board later? And the more effective you are in your communication, then the more effectively you're going to be able to get these people on board. And the way that I see the communication in general is the message is always determined by the receiver. So it doesn't matter what you say, but I've said it, I've told you 100 times.
Yeah.
If that's not landing, then it's a case of, well, we need to tweak how the message is delivered, you know, and I appreciate sometimes people need to hear the same message from a different messenger. I get that too, right?
Exactly.
But the more effective we can be in our communication, the more likely that we're going to be able to educate people on something that's going to be beneficial for them. And I'm sure, Paul, you're coming from a place of creating a win-win.
Mm-hmm.
So it's beneficial to them. It's beneficial to everybody. But if you can then make the benefit, if you can link it with their value. So I'm just thinking off the top of my head, how do you make it a win-win-win? So I talk about the ripple effect of things being beneficial by you achieving your full potential. It's beneficial to your family, your friends, your community, society, humanity, the universe. We play this out in this instance. Well, if you do a great job at educating those people, and they do, and they understand, well, that's now going to be beneficial to our business. And we know that our business delivers a phenomenal product that is far better to be in the hands of our potential customers than our competitors. Then they're going to win more market share because they've listened to their customers. Whereas if another organization, i.e. one of their competitors, ticks the energy box, for example, but has got a subpar product, then their potential customers may end up with their competitors, not them. So it's a way of it seeing it ripple the whole way through. And it's a thing that most people don't really give that much thought to, simply because they haven't. And coming back to your point about the chef and him turning all of the rings on, every person, every single person is programmed into a radio frequency called WeFM. What's in it for me? You know, and if we can understand and we can meet people at every level, them understanding what's in it for me, and it's not quite as simple as, well, if you don't do this, you're going to lose your job. You know,
but
it's really getting them to buy into it. Then that's where it's no longer it's kind of the carrot rather than the stick, because they're buying into it for their benefit.
Yeah. And I do like that approach to the carrot rather than the stick. So we work with people to. You know, I would work with the energy managers to find all the different ways of how we can influence, educate, rather than convince. Obviously, convince is on the vocabulary because we need it to happen. We need to be reducing this cost down, this consumption down. What do you think? So for me, really, one of the challenges for the energy expert is to learn the vocabulary. And understanding that, and you know, changing the word from convince to educate, and I'm sure there's a whole ream of vocabulary, and also learning the principles that you've come up with the North Star and the we frequency. They're principles that we need to understand and educate, and I appreciate you sharing that with us today, because that will filter down through our industry of people sort of learning that. What are the other challenges really around behavior change in an organization?
So it's really, really interesting one. And you're in the business of energy as a fuel source for things to happen.
Yeah.
And like I say, I've studied dozens of different modalities and lots of great people. And what one of the things that I find absolutely fascinating is language. Because words truly do create worlds. And one of the things that I found that's fascinating is the difference. Let's start at, first of all, at pain and pleasure, right? So most people will say, well, we are motivated by pain or pleasure, the carrot or the stick. And we are at a lower level. Right. So lower level thinking is pain or pleasure. You know, that's how animalistic nature is. It's pain or pleasure. Mm. The thing with pain and pleasure, though, is that they are motivators. But where this gets really interesting and it links with energy, which is this, I'm going off on a bit of a tangent here,
no,
but just stick with me, right? Is that we can be driven by inspiration or motivation. And a lot of people say, right, I've got to get motivated for this. How can I motivate people to do what I want them to do? Right. Aside from bringing in a motivational speaker, but the problem with motivation is anyone that requires motivation is external.
Yeah.
Right. So if you are required to be motivated, it's because it's an indication that you're living somebody else's values that have either been injected into you or projected onto you. And most of us spend our whole life never realizing whether we're living somebody else's values or not. One of the ways that I can tell if someone's living their values or not is from the language they're using, which is why it comes back to language. So if people are using language like I need to, I should, I ought to, I have to, that's an indication they're living somebody else's values, right? So, for example, somebody comes to you, they're in middle management, saying, right, I have to get this this energy stuff sorted because da, 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 da. Well, that's an indication that it's not something that they're intrinsically wanting to do.
Yeah.
Now, at the other end of the spectrum, you've got people using language, I love to, I choose to, I desire to. Well, that's an indication that they are inspired by what they're doing. They are living their values. So they're doing it because it's something that's meaningful for them. So where does that come and come tie into energy? Well, if we take the word inspiration, in spirit. What's another word for spirit? Energy. You're in your energy. So a lot of people, for example, they think they burn out because they're working too hard. They don't. No one burns out because they're working too hard. People burn out because they're not spending enough time doing the stuff that they love doing.
Yeah.
And that's where it links back to energy again. So if by you identifying and getting people to see by educating them that they can make these decisions, and it's because they internally want to, they're inspired to make these changes. It's the decision they're choosing to make for their reasons, their values, their North Star, or their company purpose and mission, et cetera, then it's going to be far easier for those people to be able to sort of work with those people that want to make the change than those that don't.
Brilliant. I'm on a massive learning curve here, and it's really interesting. When I thought about inviting you on, I thought this would be just a general chat about behavior, but this has gone to another level, and I really appreciate you working with us today on this. So you've written a book on this subject. Can you tell us about the book?
Absolutely, yeah. So North Star Thinking, Master Your Mindset and Live a Life You Love. It's predominantly written for individuals, but individuals work within companies and work within organizations. Yeah. And it's sort of looking at the what I would call four main pillars. So being the North Star, which is kind of what's the life mission that you're working towards, mastering your time, because there's a big myth that most of us have around time management. Then there's the piece around cultivating an attitude of gratitude. So it really is about being able to, like, we're human beings, not human doings, right? So being able to be in that state. And then there's a piece around creating the appropriate behaviors or habits to ensure that the change is implemented for the long term, not just as a sort of being done on a whim and disappear. So yeah, they're some of the topics that are discussed in the book.
Brilliant. And where can one buy that book?
Amazon, Waterstones, Barnes & Noble, you know, all the places. But as we were saying about earlier, I think you can go and pop into your local Waterstones, or you could have it delivered maybe this afternoon, you know, who knows. But Amazon.
Was that why you mentioned it earlier? No, I'm joking.
It isn't. Yeah, well, I'd like to say it was a really, really well thought out interview, and I thought I'd plug it earlier, but no, that's not the case.
Brilliant. Well, Will, and also, what do you offer your services? Is there, this is a coaching service you provide as well for our listeners?
Yeah, so depending on where people are at, I mean, we've got a range of coaching programs, and we've got everything from the book, the podcast. So there are a couple of different resources, but coaching services, yeah, everything from group programs, in person, online, our academy. So yeah, a whole range of.
And you have your own podcast, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah,
and what's that called?
It's called Make It Happen with Will Polston.
Brilliant. I'm going to listen to that. Thank you very much for that. So lastly, it's come to that time in the interview where I've sort of put you on a spot, but you're never going to be in a spot because I think you've smashed this anyway. Is there anything you can give back to our industry today as a takeaway from today's podcast?
The thing that comes to mind... In 2017, I did a TEDx talk, and the words that just come into my mind are actually the title of that talk a few years ago, because I think it's very applicable, which is, it's not about you. And I think that if we think about that in every element of what we've spoken about on the podcast today, whether it's you, it's not about you, it's about your customer, for the organizations you're dealing with, it's not about them, it's about their clients. So if we think it's not about you, and we had that principle and we applied that, and we made stuff about other people, then I think we'll find that we're willing to do so much more. I mean, I've done this with thousands of different people, and the one thing that I've found, Paul, is that people are always willing to do more for others than they're willing to do for themselves. So if we can make this about other people, and but in the way that they are driven by, whoever that may be for them, then I think would be amazed at the change that people are willing to make. That would be my thought.
That's amazing. Will, I'd really like to say thank you very much for coming along and sharing those insights around behavior change and you know, sharing your book and things and all the other contents that we can go and tap into. I'd like to say thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Brilliant. And then lastly, please, you and your family, stay safe in these times.
Thank you.